That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. It is a gorgeous morning here at the ballpark. White Sox and Tigers getting ready to play game two of the 2024 season. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on the show. Want to hear from you and get your reaction after game one of the year. A 1-0 loss to the Tigers. Offense was absent for the White Sox, although the Tigers pitched pretty well. Skubal and Foley and the rest of the bullpen looked pretty good. Andrew Chafin worked for them as well. But no doubt in my mind, the story of the ball game, the story of opening day for the White Sox in 2024 was that Garrett Crochet pitched six innings and pitched them all incredibly well. He made one mistake, an 0-2 fastball to Javier Baez, where Baez ended up coming around to score the only run of the game, some small ball by the Tigers paying off. And that was really the only way they were going to get much offense whatsoever against Crochet. Quite frankly, he baffled. I mean, was truly solid with fastball placement, with good sliders, got some swing and miss. We'll go through the numbers of Garrett Crochet's first big league start as we go throughout the show. We'll hear from White Sox manager Pedro Grifol in the post-game comments he made last night. We've got lineups for game two. We've got projected starters and the whole thing. We are into the regular season swing, and now a two-hour show for you to get involved. From 2 hours leading up to the pregame show every single Saturday, you've got White Sox Weekly right here on ESPN 1000. Speaking of, if you've ever dreamed of being in a White Sox ad, now is your chance. You can show your White Sox pride and share your favorite ballpark memories with us for the opportunity to be featured in a commercial, digital ad, billboards, and more. Submit your photos or videos at whitesox.com/fan. All right, before we get to the Garrett Crochet of it all, let's get you the pitching matchup and the lineups for game two between the White Sox and Tigers. Michael Soroka makes his White Sox debut. Soroka brought over in the Aaron Bummer trade. Remember, Bummer goes to the Braves, and then Soroka and four other players, including Nicky Lopez, comes back to the White Sox. Braden Shumake as well, who we'll talk about in a moment. Soroka's making his first start, a double Achilles guy, a lot like Jake Berger. In fact, they kind of formed a bond about those injuries. We'll more about that in just a bit. But Soroka was on top of the heap in 2019, finished runner-up in rookie of the year voting for the Atlanta Braves, had himself an all-star season, sixth in Cy Young voting. I mean, he was just really, really good before the injury set in and set him back. So it's a reclamation project of sorts for Soroka and the White Sox, and I think that's where Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz and Chris Getz have had their minds kind of set as they've brought in a lot of the pitching infrastructure, a lot of the pitching depth for this White Sox team in 2024. They've looked for reclamation projects or guys to bounce back from injury or, you know, other different circumstances where they think they can get the most out of some pitchers that were used for different specific purposes on some other teams in the last few years. I'm pretty excited. I mean, as jacked as everybody was, I think, to watch Garrett Crochet make his first big league start, I'm almost as excited for Michael Soroka. And I say almost only because we've seen Michael Soroka starts before, and he's got a whole run in 2019, then kind of battling back last year, pitched some innings there too. I can't wait to see what he's got, to see how healthy he can be. If you look in some of the corners of dark horse kind of, oh, this could be a big rebound project for this team or that team, you know, kind of the national writing, Michael Soroka is featured in some of that. It's an idea where, well, shoot, Brian Bannister's got a great reputation. Ethan Katz knows what he's doing and has a lot of pelts on the wall at this point. Soroka could be a guy that they kind of reclaim and can recapture that form in 2019, be a little bit of a hoss for you. For the Tigers, I almost said Twins, because I'm so used to seeing at this point Kenta Maeda's name and thinking, well, the Twins are in town. But Kenta Maeda signed a two-year deal for $24 million to be a veteran member of the Tigers rotation. Maeda, right-hander, a lot of slider, splitter, some fastball stuff. Did not pitch, had Tommy John surgery, did not pitch in 2022. 2023 was his return season, and he was all right, a 4.23 ERA. Maeda's never been a guy where you kind of figured, wow, that's five, six, seven innings for Kenta Maeda. Kind of a, you know, five and fly guy, not exactly a stamina dude. 104 and a third innings for the Twins last season. A good starter, a 4.23 ERA, and if you look at his FIP, his fielding independent pitching, it was a little bit below that at 4.02, an ERA plus of 102, which means he was 2% better than the average pitcher last season. A good strikeout number with 10.1 Ks per nine. Good, not great. But Maeda has been able to keep it off the barrel when he rolls. Andrew Vaughn's had some good matchups against Kenta Maeda. We'll dig into that in a little bit. But Maeda is that offseason addition meant to replace Eduardo Rodriguez for the Tigers this year. Diamondbacks snapped up Rodriguez after he exercised his opt-out. So the Tigers, with all the young pitching that they're kind of, you know, bringing up into their next tier of performance expectations, you know, guys like Tarek Skubal, who now gets written up as a dark horse AL Cy Young candidate, guys like Reese Olson, who was just kind of like showing up out of nowhere last year, now is expected to be a, you know, solid three perhaps in a good rotation. You've got Casey Mize, who's working himself back from injury. A lot of young arms that this Tigers team is going to be able to deploy throughout 2024, and Maeda, even though he's not necessarily the workhorse, is expected to be a reliable dude with a lot of veteran savvy, know-how, and, you know, kind of teaching up the young kids a little bit. So it's kind of a different role for Kenta Maeda, I think. Lineups are out as well, and they're a little bit different than they were on opening day for the White Sox. The Tigers do not – oh, no, it just posted. Look at that. The Tigers just posted a lineup, so we can give you the starting nine for each of the ball clubs here this afternoon. Andrew Benintendi is going to lead off for the White Sox, as he did yesterday. I would expect that is going to be his fairly regular spot leading off for these White Sox this season. Yoan Moncada will bat second. Luis Robert Jr. will bat third. He'll have center field, as he always does. Eloy Jimenez bats four. He's the DH. Andrew Vaughn is the first baseman, batting five. Dominic Fletcher gets his first start for the White Sox out in right field, with the lefty Skubal on the bump for the Tigers yesterday. Pedro Grifol opted for the veteran right-handed bat Kevin Pillar to face a tough lefty. Fletcher will get his first White Sox start today, and I think that's going to be the first of many for Dominic Fletcher over the next few months. A prized guy that they brought in to really take over, perhaps, in right field. 26 going on 27, and a guy who had flashed for the Diamondbacks last year. We'll talk more about Dominic Fletcher in a little bit as well. Braden Shoemake gets his first start of the year. Lefty bat against the righty Maeda. Shoemake will play short in lieu of Paul DeJong, who made the opening day start back on Thursday. Nicky Lopez plays second base and bats eight. Martin Maldonado will get the plate again today with Max Stassi on the injured list. And I hope to hear a little bit from Pedro Grifol about the situation on Max Stassi here over the coming days. Placed on the injured list due to a hip issue. Martin Maldonado will start. Corey Lee is your backup catcher. And that's the lineup for the White Sox. The Tigers have Parker Meadows at the top, Spencer Torkelson at first base. Riley Green will bat third and play right field. Kerry Carpenter will DH. Mark Canna is in left. Colt Keith has second base. Carson Kelly has the catching responsibilities for A.J. Hinch's Tigers. Javier Baez bats eight, and Zach McKinstry plays third base and will bat nine. So those are the lineups for the day. You know, I think back to the excitement that was around on Thursday afternoon. I understand that the expectations for this White Sox team, depending on who you talk to, kind of vary a little bit. The general manager says, I think we can surprise and win more games than we're projected to. This lineup, this roster, is one that is setting the table for White Sox seasons to come, and you definitely think there could be a few players that can, you know, take the bull by their horns and run with the opportunity that they're going to get, whether that means that they're part of the 2025-2026 plan or whether they can lay the groundwork to be valuable to other teams and bring back long-term assets in the future. You know, the opportunity is there on this 2024 club. But what we're trying to find out, at least from my perspective, what we're trying to find out is exactly who are going to be stars on this next best White Sox team. You know Luis Robert Jr. can do that. And coming into the season, given the prospect pedigree that Garrett Crochet had, the effectiveness, I mean, the downright dominance that he'd had out of the bullpen for the White Sox since the 2020 debut, I mean, you knew the stuff was there. But he'd never gotten a long run as a starting pitcher. I mean, you got to go back to his sophomore year at Tennessee before you see any solid length of starts. And even at that point, he was still struggling to find himself as a pitcher as a sophomore volunteer at Tennessee. So this start, the idea of moving Garrett Crochet into the rotation this season felt to a lot of people, including myself, I'll be honest about it, felt a little rushed. You could understand why the White Sox were willing to make this move, given, like I said, the pedigree that Crochet has, the opportunity that the White Sox rotation gives any pitcher looking to make a lot of starts in 24, and the results that we saw on Thursday. I mean, that was everything you could have possibly asked from Garrett Crochet, and it might have exceeded any reasonable expectations. The fastball was very good. The slider had, you know, I'd be interested to talk to Garrett about it. The slider, I think, had two different tilts to it. And when we saw Carlos Rodon at the peak of his powers in a member of the White Sox rotation, I'm not necessarily comparing the two of them or the ceilings of the both of them at this point. I think that's premature. But all I'm saying is you'd watch Carlos work, and it was fastball slider, but two different kinds of sliders that Carlos could throw. And I think a lot of guys kind of start there. If you're the fastball slider, two-pitch guy being asked to make starts every fifth day, one of the first things you can do to expand and vary your pitch mix is to kind of alter the breaks on that slider. And that can be achieved in a couple of different ways. You can change the velocity on it, which is going to alter its break. You can subtly kind of shift the grip on the pitch, which can change it a lot. Or you can just kind of change your aiming points, or a mix of all three can get you a very different looking slider, but still, you know, kind of keep the excellence that you've got with that pitch. I think Crochet may have been doing that a little bit. I think there was a cutter that got measured by Baseball Savant, just a couple of them, a few change-ups, all of them that came in over 91. I think the change-up averaged something like 91 to 93 from Crochet, four or five of them maybe yesterday. But as he, you know, grows into this starting role, it'll be really interesting to see how that pitch mix kind of expands and gets worked a little bit as well. Want to hear from Pedro Grifol after the game on Thursday. He talked a lot about Garrett Crochet and a lot about the offense that the White Sox were not able to get against Tarek Skubal and the rest of the Tigers' bullpen. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Big leg kick and a 1-2 swing and a miss, strike three. Crochet into his motion, 2-2 swing and a miss, strike three. Swing and a miss, strike three. 2-2 to Green, swing and a miss, strike three. Turnover. Called strike three, inside corner, and 2-2 coming. Swing and a miss, strike three. Give Crochet seven strikeouts against no walks so far.
Yeah, good googly woo with that, right?
Called strike three on a fastball. Crochet gets Vierling.
That was the day for Garrett Crochet yesterday. He was terrific. Six innings of work, five hits, one earned run, and they had to play small ball to get it. Eight strikeouts, and perhaps the most impressive number in this day and age, maybe in any day and age when we go back and talk about what really matters, no walks. No walks for Garrett Crochet. It's a little bit of an aggressive Tigers lineup. There are some good on-base percentage guys in that team or in that lineup yesterday, sure, but Crochet absolutely dealt. I was dazzled by Crochet. I mean, really exceeded expectations. I thought the work he was able to put in passed everything you could have expected from him. I mean, he was first pitch fastball to a lot of guys first time through the lineup, which makes a lot of sense. He's not just a two-pitch pitcher, but everything other than the fastball and slider are kind of coming along here. It's a work in progress for Crochet, which I think makes the possibilities really exciting for this White Sox pitching staff. It was anything but conventional to name Crochet the opening day starter. But when the White Sox started camp at Glendale, Arizona, and Camelback Ranch, Pedro Grifol made it known that competition was going to be the key, that guys were going to be allowed to fight for their spots. Garrett had made it known that he wanted to be a starter in the offseason, even before camp began. And with the trade of Dylan Cease to the San Diego Padres, all the stars aligned. I think it's entirely possible that Crochet could have made this rotation, or may have made this rotation, even if Dylan Cease were, for one reason or another, still on the roster come opening day. I think Cease would have started opening day, and we'd be lining up here talking about what Garrett Crochet's first start of the season was going to be like, first start ever, all that kind of stuff. But this was, or Thursday rather, was something pretty special for a guy making his first major league start on opening day, the ninth guy in the last 111 years of Major League Baseball to make his first start on opening day. I'm sure you heard the fun fact. White Sox manager Pedro Grifol spoke to reporters after the game yesterday. We played some of this on the postgame show yesterday, but we want to hear it back because you want to know what the manager thought of the start and what he thought of the offense as well, because as fun as it was to watch Crochet work, it was tough for the White Sox bats to get anything going against the Tigers. So here, after Thursday's loss to the Tigers, is Pedro Grifol's post-game press conference.
I mean, what's there to talk about? He's 6'6". You know, he's confident. He comes right at you. He's not afraid. You know, he mixes pitches. He's got weapons to get people out. So he stood out there like a man today and did his job.
Is that a pitch to the kind of thing that you saw all spring and something that you expect to see for him going forward?
That's why he was opening day. You know, that's what we saw in spring training. You know, other than one outing, and I had thought even that outing in Kansas City in surprise, he had that one hiccup in I think it was the first inning, you know, but then he cleaned it up right away. And other than that one inning, he was he was solid the whole spring. This outing doesn't shock me. It doesn't surprise me. You know, I've talked about this over and over again. You know, when you have a pitcher with that type of stuff, that has that will and that drive to prove that he can do something, you know, it just doesn't surprise me. I mean, what can we expect moving forward? One game at a time. You know, we'll see. He hasn't really done it in the big leagues before. You know, so, you know, we'll see. We'll, you know, just go out there and prepare yourself for the next outing and see what happens.
Do people not realize maybe how electric?
Yep. With the pitcher you have.
It makes a world of difference. I mean, Maldonado was in control the whole game. He had a plan going in. He studied these guys like he studies every single club. You know, he knows how to navigate through a game. He stays with pitcher strengths. There's a reason he's been to three World Series, and there's a reason he's been to six postseasons, and there's a reason he's here.
Do people not totally realize maybe how electric Garrett's stuff is, how much it plays, because he's been through the injury, he's been gone for, you know, a year and a half maybe.
I mean, that's, you know, that's okay. That could be, you know, it's like everything else, right? We got to go out there and prove it. He's got to go out there and prove it, you know. So I was proud of our guys. We had a ton of energy, obviously, opening day. But, you know, we're going to catch the baseball and we're going to pitch it. You know, and we just got to find ways to, you know, to claw some runs and win these type ball games. These are the games you got to win. You know, you got to win them. Find a way to win them. You know, if you want to be really good, and we'll get there.
What did you see from the approaches?
Some really good pitching on that other side, you know, as well. So we had a good game plan going in. We thought, you know, he made pitches, and you know, didn't capitalize on it. I mean, there's two really good pitching staffs getting after it. You know, it's one of those games.
Is this the best possible way to feel good about a loss? And there's no good way, of course, to feel good about a loss, but can you walk out of here tonight and rest your crew saying, you know, we're a different team, we're
well,
prepared to
play? Yeah, well, we are a different team. You know, you look at that pitching staff today, and there's only one returning pitcher that was here on opening day. We're a different team, and we're going to approach things differently. There's no way of looking at a loss. The way I see this thing is we did some really good things on the field today. We got to improve on other things, and if we want to be a contending club, we have to find ways to score runs and beat those type of pitchers. I mean, those are the guys that are pitching in October. So you got to be able to beat them here if you want to be able to, you know, to participate in that type of baseball.
What was the explanation you got on the Vaughn striking?
7 seconds. He got in there. You know, he got in there a second too late. You know, it was like the perfect storm. I you know, haven't seen it completely, but you know, our guys saw it and they gave me a little rundown on it. The pitcher wasn't on the mound yet. It doesn't really matter. You got to be in the box. So. Honora, you know, told me that he don't like to make those, but you know, he's got to, you know, so that's his job. So I mean, if he wasn't in there on time, then you know, it's the right call.
One other thing on Garrett, and that is, can you talk a little bit about him establishing a change or two early and a breaking ball to so that they're not sitting in 98?
You know, sometimes you can sit on 98 with him and you're still not going to be able to get there. But the fact that he was mixing his pitches and he's got that cutter now and that changeup and he was throwing those for strikes ahead and behind makes it a little difficult for hitters. But, again, you know, it's the whole thing. It's the presence. It's the stuff. It's just the way he attacked. It's the confidence. You know, and if, when you toe the rubber with that type of presence and confidence, and you have those type of weapons, it'd be pretty good.
So we asked you yesterday about how you can ever choreograph the game, but did he give you more efficiency or more length than you maybe even expected today?
I think you should play the lotto. I mean, I really do. We actually talked about, you know, that the lineup of pitching that we put out there before the game. You know, we knew when we wanted to deploy Kopech, it fit perfectly. We knew when what we were going to do with Garcia, it worked out perfectly. It doesn't always work that way. I think I said yesterday, 95% of the times you're audible. You know, so today we didn't. Today it was, it happened how we mapped it out.
That's White Sox manager Pedro Grifol after Thursday's loss to the Tigers. 1-0 the final. You heard him wrapping up with some thoughts about the offense there. A lot about Garrett Crochet, obviously, because that was the story of the game. For the White Sox side of things, anyway, we'll talk about that offense, a new look to the lineup, and a rookie who's going to make his White Sox debut today that may mean quite a bit to the future of this club. Before we hit the break and have more White Sox Weekly for you coming up, we've got a pregame show at 12:30, first pitch 1:10 for the White Sox and Tigers. Michael Soroka and Kenta Maeda are the starters for the home team and visitors, respectively. We've got a pause, 10 seconds, real quick. Station identification. We got more White Sox Weekly on the other side. We'll get into those offensive issues, the debut of Dominic Fletcher, plus some news on how the White Sox rotation is going to shake out against the Braves when they come to town starting on Monday. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox baseball is back. That's why we got a two-hour show today. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field for opening day on March 20th. Well, you should have joined us. You can join us today. We got a 1:10 start for the ball game today between the White Sox and Tigers. It is another 1:10 start tomorrow afternoon. A lot of day games early on in the schedule, which means you should play hooky from work. I didn't say that. Tell your boss that you're going to, I don't know, Venezuela or something, or maybe Liechtenstein, and instead come to the ballpark. They play the Braves, the White Sox do, at 1:10 on Monday, and then a 6:40 game on Tuesday with a 1:10 start on a Wednesday, getaway day before the White Sox head out on the road for the first time in 2024. To purchase tickets for all of those games, go to WhiteSox.com and get yourself set up for some fun at the ballpark. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We'll head out to the phone lines in just a moment. Got some news from the Intrepids covering the White Sox. The beat reporters have tweeted Vinny Duber of CHGO, who's a good one with a heck of a mustache and a solid taste in beverage, tweets this: the Sox will start Chris Flexen and Garrett Crochet in the first two games of their series with the Braves, which begins Monday on the South Side. Game three starter to be announced. Former Sox hurler Reynaldo Lopez is the probable starter for the Braves in game two against Crochet. So the pitching rotation for the rest of the way against the Tigers, of course, Kenta Maeda for the Tigers today, Michael Soroka for the White Sox. It'll be Jack Flaherty for the Tigers, another addition to their team this year. And Eric Fetty will make his White Sox debut on Sunday, tomorrow. And then, according to this tweet from Vinny, who I assume has some impeccable sources, Chris Flexen makes his White Sox debut against the Braves on April 1st. And then Garrett Crochet will start the night game April 2nd against the Braves, with Reynaldo Lopez scheduled to go. And then game three starter for the White Sox is to be decided. It's possible that the White Sox make a roster move and bring somebody up to make that start. Maybe Nick Nastrini, maybe. Who knows? We'll find out. Out in Lockport, it is Matt on White Sox Weekly. Matt, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind, man?
Hey, I just want to say, thanks for taking the call. I just want to talk a little bit about Garrett Crochet. You know, I think Pedro and, you know, he can't should be real, real happy with you know, how he started, you know, making his first career start and, you know, what he did, no walks. I know the Tigers are not going to be amazing, but they're still a pretty decent team this year. And Soroka today, you know, Soroka, when he's coming off, I think it was the same Achilles that he tore twice. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Nope, that's right.
Yeah. And I think it was 2019, too, where he had the, where he was rookie, second place rookie of the year. You know, he does have a lot of upside. So, you know, we'll see what he does for the Sox this year. To me, you know, that was the biggest part of the Braves trade with Bummer. But, like I said, just having him and seeing what Ethan Katz can do with him, it's kind of exciting to a team that doesn't have a whole lot of it this year. But, you know, we'll see what he's got.
Yeah, appreciate you, Matt. It's a good point. I think what this team, this new front office, is able to do in terms of reclaiming some value from pitching and then either having that reclaimed value be a part of 24 and 25 and 26 and so on, or being, you know, value that other teams might want to come in and trade for and give you young assets, young players that can be a part of those future teams. That's, in my mind, if not goal number one, then goal number two of the 2024 season. And I don't love that it's that way, but that is the business of baseball, and that is where the cycle is at for the White Sox at this point. I mean, Michael Soroka, let me just flip over to the old baseball reference page here real quick. But Michael Soroka is a guy that fits a couple of different categories, right? He does have a track record. He has understood what it takes to get up every fifth day and put up great numbers. A 2.68 ERA in 29 games in 2019, and also is a, I guess, victim of major injury, two Achilles tears on the same Achilles that set him back quite a bit. It's funny, I mean, almost like cosmic coincidence that the White Sox are a team that have seen, has already seen an amazing comeback story in now Marlins third baseman Jake Berger coming back from two Achilles tear, former first round. I mean, listen, you're White Sox fans. I don't have to tell you the story of Jake Berger and how much fun that was to watch, specifically last season, and his rise to being a legitimate, more than legitimate power bat in Major League Baseball. He's that dude and has come back from two Achilles tears. Soroka will hopefully start the same comeback conversation here with the White Sox this afternoon. I got a chance to meet Soroka in spring training just for a little bit. Seemed like a really nice guy. 26 years old. He'll turn 27 in August. 6'5", 250. And, you know, what matters probably most in all of that is the fact that he's not yet 27. Kevin Zipak's our producer in the studios downtown. He and Jack McGrath are both there. And during the break on White Sox Weekly here, after we played Pedro Grifol's postgame comments for you in the last segment, we couldn't help but say Randy Johnson when we were comping Garrett Crochet's work. You know, just kind of what it looks like. No one is crazy enough, maybe Kevin, no one is crazy enough to go ahead and say, yeah, Garrett Crochet's got the Randy Johnson track ahead of him. No, absolutely not. But what was crazy to me about Randy Johnson's career, always has been, and this is, you know, comps aside to Garrett Crochet, that's nothing to do with that, is the fact that Randy Johnson had no idea where the baseball was going until he was about 27 years old, 28 years old. The walks were, I mean, just so many of them. And even when he was great, he still carried a fairly high walk rate with a ridiculously high strikeout rate that moved him through batters like a hot knife through butter. But what we're seeing here is, hopefully, the idea that the White Sox can take guys that are at that 25, 26, 27-year-old precipice. We used to call this a lot, and I think baseball has changed quite a bit since we did, but you used to hear a lot, oh, 28, age 26, age 27 season, this is when players really hit their peak, or this is when it really all comes together for a guy and an opportunity. And you pass that peak, that age 27, age 28 season, and you don't have a lot of chances for success. You are what you are at that point. And I think that has been largely, or if not completely, turned on its head by modern player development, by the idea of having all of these, you know, slow motion cameras and stat tracks and math that you can apply to a player's output and then adjust it. I think that's pretty much blown the idea of being 27 and you're great or you're nothing out of the water at this point. But that's where the White Sox player development side of things, from the pro side of things, really needs to take a step in the good direction, right? That's something that the prior regime had struggled to accomplish. It's something that with the hirings of Brian Bannister, Jin Young, and Josh Barfield, and more in that White Sox front office are all very much focused on doing, because to be a successful organization in today's baseball, in my mind, you cannot just be stars and average players. You can't have two or three guys that are, you can expect to put up, you know, 6.5 wins above replacement type seasons and then just kind of be average, you know, two wins above replacement everywhere else. Can you be a good team that way? Sure. Can you be expected to win your first round playoff matchup? Can you be a team that is favored to be in the postseason mix year after year? I don't think you can. What I think you need to be instead is able to develop those two win players into more in certain seasons. Being able to get the most out of some of that depth throughout a year is going to get you much more longevity in terms of an organization than plans that we'd seen in years past, either from this team or others, you know, throughout baseball. It's not like that was the only way, or it's not like this was the only team that had kind of arranged themselves that way. Plenty had, with varying levels of success. But I think if you're trying to get yourself to the point where you're the Rays, you're the Dodgers, you're a perennial contender, then this is a way to sustainably do it. And you've got to be good at a lot of different things in a front office as a coaching staff in order to get the organization to that standpoint. And hopefully that's what we're watching the beginnings of here in 2024, is a much wider player development apparatus that you're going to see results of on the field. And who knows, maybe that has to do, or maybe that will involve Michael Soroka as much as anybody else. We'll see this afternoon. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You want to hop on the show like Matt just did? Feel free. Love to hear from you. Had a lot of you at the ballpark yesterday. 33,000 for opening day. It was great to see the seats packed. If you're driving around this morning thinking, I do have an afternoon off, I could use a little bit of baseball in my life, come down to the ballpark. It's shaping up to be a gorgeous day. It was fairly wet and rainy when I took the dog out this morning, but now we got clouds parting and sunshine and headed for 60 degrees if we're not there already at the ballpark. So a really solid day for baseball here at 35th and Shields. When we come back, we've talked a lot about pitching in the first hour or so of the show. We're going to talk more about the offensive side of things for the White Sox. Tough day for the bats yesterday. Thursday against the Tigers. We'll see where some solutions come from and how some lineup changes have already been manifested here for game number two. We'll get back into that lineup. Oh, and Jordan Leisure, White Sox rookie who's yet to make his big league debut, will make his White Sox weekly debut at 11:45. Looking forward to talking with him about getting the call to the bigs. All that and a whole lot more next on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000. White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox are 0-1, looking for the first victory of the season. They fell to the Tigers 1-0 on opening day back on Thursday. Back at it after an off day yesterday for a whole lot more. You know, looking at the schedule coming up, White Sox get the Braves here in town on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Then head out to face the Kansas City Royals for four games. Then the Cleveland Guardians for three before another off day. And then the next home series against the Cincinnati Reds and Kansas City Royals, by the way, three games apiece in that six-game homestand. The White Sox have their work cut out for them in the first month or two of the year. That Kansas City team signed a lot of players in the offseason looking to get them back to respectability. They finished last in the AL Central last year and are also hoping that a lot of their young players, Vinny Pasquantino and MJ Melendez and the rest, are on the rise as opposed to, you know, guys looking to be, as opposed to replacement level players, to be quite honest with you. That was a big issue for the Royals last season, as were some injuries to those players too. I think Pasquantino got nicked up a little bit throughout the year. He could be a good one. Then you look at the Braves, who are scheduled to win a World Series. Them and the Dodgers, I mean, those two teams, whether it be the depth or the talent at the very top, I mean, those are tough rosters. We'll more about them when we get to that series. Cleveland Guardians are an interesting squad. I think in some ways, though, the White Sox have made so many connections to the Royals organization here over the last, call it 2 years or so, Pedro Grifol and Chris Getz and many others in the front office and some players too, you know, kind of having those Royals connections, I wonder whether or not a comp to the Guardians, I mean, being intra-division teams, is a more interesting one for this 2024 White Sox team and maybe beyond. That Guardians team, just looking at the last couple of years, sure, it's got Jose Ramirez right in the middle of the lineup. And at times, you know, especially when they'd made the playoffs 2 years ago, whether it was Andrés Giménez or others, you know, they got some solid offensive performances from a guy like, you know, Josh Naylor at times, who was super clutch and did some damage here at Guaranteed Rate Field, no doubt about it. But that team played really good defense, pitched incredibly well, no doubt about it, and ran the bases well, stole some bases, and made the most of opportunities that the ball in play gave them. And I wonder if in a division like the AL Central in 2024 and what will probably be 25 and maybe even 26, I wonder if that's not as good as a blueprint as any to win a division shaped the way this is. That's not to say, that's not me sitting here going, hey, look, here are the ways the White Sox can make the playoffs. I certainly hope that's the case and that they surprise everybody. And we've got late, you know, October and November baseball here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Don't get me wrong. However, this is a team restructuring itself, rebuilding itself a little bit. And I think, you know, one of the things that got talked about a lot, maybe the thing that got talked about the most in spring training and even in the postgame presser from Pedro Grifol on Thursday, was that they are going to, on the margins, where it matters a lot to make the right decision, throw to the right base, make the right baseball play. In a lot of ways, that is, you know, the bar, right? That's got to be where you excel in Major League Baseball. If you hurt yourself, you're going to win a lot fewer games than you think. But there are plenty of teams. And I heard James Fegan, a Sox machine, talking about this some, both I think in his writing and on a pod somewhere too. And he's absolutely right. Smart dude is James Fegan. That there are plenty of super talented teams over the years that lose games when they shouldn't. You know, a roster where you'll go, my God, it's, I don't know how you beat them. But sure enough, they're winning 83 and 84 games when they look, talent-wise, like a 90-something win ball club. Well, sometimes those teams get beat by other squads that just don't give games away. Now, if you're asking me where I'd rather be on the spectrum, I'd rather be, you know, like Vince Vaughn said in the breakup, right? I'd rather have fate have me highly skilled and loaded with talent than anything else. But all things considered, you cannot make mistakes in baseball. You know, that's, you've got to be solid for as many of the 162 as you can. To that end, offensively, the White Sox did not give themselves many chances on Thursday against the Tigers. They also did not make many mistakes against the Tigers. I can really only think of one mistake that got made Thursday against the Tigers, and that was the 0-2 pitch to Javier Baez that let him get on with a single. He advanced with a stolen base and was able to come around on a ground out and sacrifice fly to score the game's only run. Now, those kinds of mistakes, you know, just kind of leaving a fastball over too much of the plate in the strike zone, up, but in the strike zone, that's one thing. Martin Maldonado deciding to go with an 0-2 fastball against a guy in Javi Baez who is very susceptible to breaking stuff. Sure, I think that's an absolutely valid conversation to have. I think on the other side of that coin is, look how good Garrett Crochet's fastball was all day long on Thursday. You can kind of understand why that pitch gets called as opposed to a back foot slider or something like that. The mistakes that weren't made, throwing the wrong base, not making routine plays, not hitting cutoff man, all that kind of stuff. Although Garrett and the White Sox really only in one circumstance had runners in scoring position with the Tigers really threatening much at all. And that was in, I believe it was the eighth inning. Is that the inning that Michael Kopech worked? Yeah, the eighth, where Michael Kopech worked. And we'll talk about him a little bit out of the bullpen some too. Those were really the only opportunities the Tigers had to run away with the ball game. Now, offensively, Luis Robert had an infield single, a couple of awkward swings, two strikeouts in a 1-for-4 day. Eloy Jimenez was 1-for-3. He popped up in the first after Robert singled to make it their first base runner and two outs in the inning. Also lined out in the seventh, a good play by Riley Green, who was out there in left and will have right field for the Tigers today. They've got a good outfield with Parker Meadows and Riley Green. Matt Vierling was in right field yesterday, but it will be Mark Canna in left, Parker Meadows in center, and Riley Green for the Tigers outfield-wise. Two of those three, I mean, Canna's not bad, I don't think, but Meadows and Green are very, very good defensively. That's a good defensive outfield, and the White Sox came up empty a couple of times. I think Robert made an out in left on a hard-hit fly ball to Riley Green that he was able to make a good play on. Eloy Jimenez did as well. And then Andrew Vaughn is kind of the day that I want to talk about a little bit here too, because I think if his day goes a little bit different, I'm not saying the White Sox win the ball game, but I think we're looking at what was a very soft offensive output and looking at it a little bit differently. Andrew Vaughn had a good swing at a first pitch from Tarek Skubal in the fourth inning after Eloy Jimenez reached on a single through the left side. So Vaughn goes down 0-1. 0-2, he tries to check his swing, and can't hold up, gets a strike called, works himself back to a 2-2 count, 3-2 pitch, nowhere near the strike zone, and home plate umpire Brian Onora rings him up for a strike 3-2. The 3-2 pitch is a changeup inside and probably up, and Vaughn gets called out for looking on a pitch that was very much not in the strike zone. Vaughn had singled in that first bat against Tarek Skubal, and you were thinking after that and a good swing on the first pitch where he just missed one, okay, that's a tough AB and a tough spot to have the bat taken out of your hands when you've got one on and one out in what is pretty obviously going to be a low-scoring game. Paul DeJong would strike out on an 0-2 fastball to end the inning. Three strikeouts in that inning lets that one-out single by Jimenez just kind of fall by the wayside. And maybe even worse, though Vaughn worked the pitch count deep, DeJong was out on three pitches against Skubal, and he kept the pitch count low, very low. He was efficient all day long and stayed in for two more 1-2-3 innings. In Vaughn's final at-bat in the seventh against Shelby Miller, who went 1-2-3, the White Sox did not have a base runner in the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, or ninth against the Tigers. But in that seventh inning at-bat, Andrew Vaughn takes a good cut at what I think, if I remember right, was a Shelby Miller fastball, fouled it away. The 0-2 was a pitch in that Vaughn checked his swing on, and it hit the knob of the bat. That thing went down the right field line, and for a little while there, just because, you know, it was in on the hands, he jumped back a little bit. The catcher, Rogers, was up and out of the catching area. A lot of confusion on that play. Did it hit him? Did it not? Am I going down at first? Did it only stay fair? All this other stuff. And Vaughn wasn't in the batter's box by the time the pitch timer hit 8 seconds. I don't know that anyone on the field was ready for play, but the rules state that Andrew Vaughn has to be in that batter's box with 8 seconds to go. Pedro Grifol addressed this. We played it for you here on White Sox Weekly 2 in his postgame comments that Onora said to him, I don't like that as much as anybody else. I want to be able to give him more time. I can't. Those are the rules. In some instances, you can, let's say if Vaughn had, I don't know, hit one down the right field line that just dropped foul and he's like rounding second base for a double or something like that, then there's more time to be had. He's got to get back to the box and that's umpire's discretion. But, you know, he didn't reset the clock. It was good to go. And with 8 seconds left, Vaughn wasn't there and he gets called out on strikes. So what, you know, I think given the swings I saw Vaughn able to take against Skubal and then Miller in the seventh, that Vaughn, you know, had pretty good timing on Thursday. Instead, it's a 1-for-3 day with two looking strikeouts, and the score sheet, you know, it looks a lot different for Vaughn than it would have otherwise. Kind of an in-depth, you know, look at one game, but I think that also speaks a little bit about what the White Sox are going to have to work with offensively. You can't have those two at-bats go the other way. You know, you've got to capitalize here because as the White Sox get to, you know, talking about Thursday's lineup, Paul DeJong, Kevin Pillar, Martin Maldonado, and then Nicky Lopez at 6, 7, 8, and 9, those are guys that depend on high BABIPs. You know, the ball falling into play, contact dudes, except for DeJong, who need the ball to drop in order to be real productive offensively. DeJong's more of a big power, swing and miss sort of guy, but you knew that already. DeJong had an over 3-day. That gets me to the lineup changes for today, or at least we will get to the lineup changes for today in just a little bit. A new shortstop for the White Sox and a new right fielder as well. We'll talk about Dominic Fletcher and Braden Shoemake making their White Sox debuts when we come back here on White Sox Weekly. Oh, and rookie Jordan Leisure is going to join us at 11:45. So don't go anywhere. A whole lot of White Sox talk coming your way on ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Tigers coming up here in a little bit. A 1-10 first pitch for the White Sox and Detroit Tigers at Guaranteed Rate Field. Game 2 of the season coming up. We've got our pregame show at 12:30. First pitch at 1:10. Len Casper and Darren Jackson take over at 1 o'clock. Kenta Maeda for the Tigers. Michael Soroka makes his White Sox debut. And the lineup for the White Sox looks different than it did yesterday. I keep saying yesterday, Thursday as well. I'm in midseason form. Every commercial break, Kevin Zipak reminds me that the White Sox didn't play yesterday. They played Thursday. but a little peek behind the curtain. I'm not smart. And once the baseball season starts, the calendar to me just becomes one big blob of game times. And I don't know what yesterday was or what I did. I just know whether the White Sox, well, apparently I don't remember whether the White Sox play, but I know what time that they play at tomorrow. And that's really all I remember about my day-to-day life. Oh, that and my 15-year-month-old daughter is very cute. Those are the two things that I can keep in my brain once baseball season starts. That's about it. Anyway, Dominic Fletcher is in right field for the White Sox today, and Braden Shumake is playing shortstop. Paul DeJong had short yesterday, and Kevin Pillar had right field on Thursday. Gosh, did it again right there. Was just talking about it. Two lefties in the lineup against the right-hander Kanta Maeda. Fletcher is, I think, kind of emblematic of how the White Sox, you know, outside of the Dylan Cease trade, kind of emblematic of how the White Sox began to change in this offseason. The White Sox started their 12th consecutive different opening day second baseman on Thursday. Nicky Lopez was that guy. Each of the last dozen years, there's been a different second baseman for the White Sox. And while that hasn't changed, you're still going to see Nicky Lopez there quite a bit. Right field may well find a solution here. You certainly hope so. Dominic Fletcher came up to the Arizona Diamondbacks last season early on and played really, really well for an NL team that would find itself in the World Series in 2023. They lost to the Rangers, of course. Fletcher saw about a month and a half of action. He was really good in the first 3 or 4 weeks. He struggled a bit on a road trip, and when Alec Thomas got healthy, starting outfielder for them, Dominic Fletcher was sent back to the minor leagues to make room for Thomas, who was a part of the long term for them. Fletcher, who is going to turn 27, is hopefully part of the long term solution for the White Sox in right field. That's another position where the White Sox, second base and right field, right? I mean, how many years have we talked about who's going to be there and who's going to be there long term? Dominic Fletcher is a guy that the White Sox are certainly hoping can be there long term in right field. A solid defender, a guy, lefty bat. Well, White Sox brought in a ton of lefty bats, who's going to, I think, get by on bat to ball as a top tier skill set rather than power. He had two home runs in 28 games with the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2023. I'll click over to his minor league numbers too. It's not that power has been his calling card, but solid defense, a good bat to ball, being able to use all fields, you know, that's kind of the profile for Dominic Fletcher. Across his minor leagues seasons in 2022, where he played at Double A and Triple A, Fletcher hit 12 home runs in 133 games. And last year, in 66 games at Reno, he hit 10 home runs. That's not to say necessarily that you can't grow into some power. We've certainly seen guys do that. As a corner outfielder, you'd love to see that 20 home run possibility from a guy that you're going to give a whole lot of at-bats to out there. But there are other ways to get it done as well, right? We're just talking about the Guardians. I think they had all of like 6 home runs from their starting outfielders last season. That's been a search for them for a really long time. I think Fletcher is going to be played cautiously, perhaps, in the first month or so of the year. And what I mean by that is making sure that you find the right matchups for him in order to get the confidence bubbling and more playing time available. There's a reason Kevin Pillar was added back to the roster after being released from the roster just before opening day. And that's because they wanted a competent right-handed bat, a guy that plays good defense and understands his strike zone and can handle some tough lefties, handle assignments versus tough lefties, and provide some shields, I guess, for Dominic Fletcher. The other side of that equation, too, is what we saw. I remember Andrew Vaughn's rookie season when Tony La Russa was manager, and one of the things that I thought was done really well there by Tony was finding the right places and matchups to play Andrew Vaughn in the first 2 months. A guy who had, you know, not played much minor league ball at all, you know, got anointed as that next guy, was going to be a DH, ended up moving to the outfield, and you remember the story. But I thought Tony La Russa did a really good job, and the success would speak to it, of being able to get Andrew Vaughn the right matchups at the right time in those first 2 months, keep his legs fresh, keep his confidence up. all that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised to see kind of a similar situation for Dominic Fletcher here in the next little bit. I also wouldn't be surprised to see Fletcher, you know, really kind of take hold of the opportunity and run with it early on. Talent's going to play. We've heard that from Pedro Grifol over and over again, that this that competition is going to move this team to the right place, and Fletcher's certainly got the ability to compete for and earn what could be a starter's complement of at-bats early on this year. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Keep that handy. We're going to take a break a little early because Jordan Leisure is going to join us on the other side. The White Sox rookie got called to the show, is yet to make his major league debut, but he will make his White Sox weekly debut when we come back on ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Tigers coming up at 1:10 this afternoon. Our pregame show at 12:30. White Sox got a great start from Garrett Crochet in game number one of the season. The bullpen pitched well, too. And we may see some bullpen expertise in today's game as well. Hopefully, maybe, with the White Sox debut, the MLB debut of one Jordan Leisure, who joins us on White Sox Weekly right now. Jordan, appreciate the time, my friend. Great getting to meet you the other day. And congratulations on making the bigs. This has to have been an awesome, awesome week for you.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, Connor. But yeah, it's been quite the past few days, that's for sure.
I know you told the story to some reporters in the clubhouse the other day, hoping you can rehash it a little bit. Not sure that, you know, every White Sox fans has come up with it yet, but you may have, I'll let you tell the story yourself. You may have told a few too many people that you were coming up to the show and had to make sure everybody put the clamps on it before the news came out. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever they told me that, you know, they had me in the office, and Getz told me, hey, listen, you know, it's not official yet. So try not to post on social media or anything. So I was trying to tell, you know, everyone in my family and then close friends, and then some other people started to find out, and I was like, maybe I told too many people. I didn't know if it was going to end up on social media and get in trouble with Getz or Pedro, but I think it worked out all right.
I completely understand that. I think everybody has had a secret or some good news that you share with other people and go, hey, you can't tell anyone. And there's almost like two levels of, you can't tell anyone this, but, and then there's the next one was like, You can't tell anyone this, otherwise I have to come after you. Like, that's the level of secret this have to be. Is that the kind of the reinforcement you went with?
Yeah. I was, you know, telling people I was close to, like, hey, try not to tell too many other people, don't post it anywhere. And then I, you know, they ended up telling their close friends, and they'd reach out to me, and I was like, oh, it might have got too far.
What was Thursday like for you?
It was great. Getting to come out of center field, and seeing the stadium filled with White Sox fans and, you know, rolling around the outfield, and they're all screaming and yelling with excitement. A lot of them yelling my name, which was kind of crazy to hear and see. But it was a really cool moment. And just to feel the excitement from the fans for that opening day and the passion that they have for this team. It was a really special moment for me personally, but I think for the team as well. And it's definitely something I won't forget.
Take me back to the start of camp, Jordan. I would imagine that you knew you had a chance to make this roster, but I'm wondering what things that you've put in front of yourself as, okay, if I do this, this, and this, or whatever it was, then I know that I've got my best chance to make this roster, that I got the best chance to break camp with the White Sox.
Yeah, I think just from the start, I wanted to come in ready to go 100%. And they put me to the test right away. And the first batters I faced were Eloy and Benintendi and Robert Jr. and pretty much the top five guys in our lineup. And so I was like, okay, they're, you know, they want to see what I can do. And I, you know, faced those guys, and it went well. And so I think from that moment on, it was like, just take it one outing at a time. And every inning in the spring games, I was trying to do my best to get three outs and be efficient and then focus on the next one. So it was more of not trying to think too far ahead, but just focus on one outing at a time and knowing that if I piece it all together the whole spring that I'd have a good chance.
What's your path to your current arsenal been like? I know, you know, guys come up as starters, you spend some time in college, you tinker with stuff, mess around with stuff. What has the journey been like to get to what you're throwing right now?
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. In college, I didn't really have any good secondary off-speed pitch, so it was mostly fastballs, and luckily I had a good enough fastball that I was able to get away with that. But once I got into pro ball, I told the coaches with the Dodgers, like, hey, like, you know, this curveball slurve thing that I'm throwing right now, and that's obviously not very good. I want to throw a slider. And so they helped me get to a slider and just kind of refine it over the next year into a hard slider or something I feel like I can throw any count. It got to the point in Double A where I was searching for a third pitch, something I could throw against lefties. And so whenever I came to Charlotte last season, the pitching coordinator, Zaleski, worked with me and he was like, hey, we think you should be throwing a curveball. So got to work on that. Got to throw it a bunch in the fall league. And then in the off season, feel like I refined everything and came in the spring with fastball, slider, curveball all ready to go.
When you think back to being notified that you were being traded to the White Sox from an organization that, you know, thought highly of you, drafted, I mean, this is the business of baseball, but mm-hmm. also this is your life and it's a big change and it's a big opportunity too. What do you think White Sox fans should know about, you know, what happened to Jordan Leisure when that trade got announced, when you got notified of it?
You know, there was a lot of emotions. Obviously, I was in the clubhouse in my Double A stadium with the Dodgers in Tulsa and got the phone call. And all the teammates there that were on that team with me were guys that I came up with the Dodgers with. So it was a little sad leaving them because we have, you know, great relationships there. You play with these guys all season long. You see them more than your own family. They become your family. So I think the first reaction was, you know, a little sad, emotional, leaving those guys. But then talking to Getz and then talking to the White Sox guys and how excited they were to have me, then I got super excited for the new opportunity and kind of a chance to come into a new team and have a clearer path to help the big league team win. So it was, you know, definitely an emotional day, but I think at the end of the day, there was a lot of excitement on my end. And then for Nastrini as well, since we got traded together, we were super excited to be coming over here together. So it was a pretty cool day.
I have a feeling you'll you may be seeing Nick on the big league roster somewhat soon. I'm not asking you to spill any beans or anything, but I would imagine White Sox fans can look forward to Nick Nastrini's debut sooner rather than later.
Oh, for sure. He had a great spring as well. And, you know, I think the plan for him is to help the big league team as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing him again soon.
So you're 25. You are a late 90s kid.
Yeah.
Born in Florida. Who was your team growing up? Who was your favorite player growing up?
Growing up, my grandpa took me to Rays games all the time. So that was my team. And I was lucky enough, me and him went to the game where we watched Matt Garza throw the only no-hitter in Tampa Bay Rays history.
No way!
So we were at that game in 2010, and so that was super exciting. But growing up, I mean, watching James Shields, I remember he was one of my favorite pitchers. Carl Crawford, one of my favorite players to watch play. That pretty much the whole 2008 Rays team led by Evan Longoria was super exciting for me, you know, 10 years old in Tampa, watching that team do what a lot of people didn't think they could do, which is, you know, kind of something I look at with this team. A lot of people aren't really counting on this White Sox team to do much, but, you know, there's a lot of excitement and young guys in this clubhouse that are looking forward to make something happen.
Talking with Jordan Leisure here on White Sox Weekly. Jordan, I wonder, you know, going back to the arsenal that you're working with, right, the slider and curve that you kind of developed as a minor leaguer with the Dodgers, being that you are 25 and part of this new crop of players that, you know, I would imagine that you've had a camera on your bullpen sessions, you know, a slow motion camera, an edge rusher, whatever, probably since the day you got drafted, and maybe even a couple of times in college. Is that just part of baseball now? Can you think of, I mean, there's probably never been another way for you.
Yeah. I will say that was the big change coming into pro ball. At college, like, we didn't really have the resources to have stuff like that. And then coming into pro ball, now you're throwing bullpens with the TrackMan set up. So you're getting data from that, the slow motion camera behind you, where they can, you know, capture the video and immediately look at it. So you can throw a pitch and then step back and see exactly how the ball's come out of your hand and make adjustments. So that was a big, big change for me to get used to. But I learned a lot, and I think it's really helped me become the pitcher I am.
Are there certain things that you like to see now that you've gotten used to what that kind of information can give you? Are there things you're looking for in sessions with the video more than others, you know, whether it be keys or pitch grips or whatever?
Not really. I try not to go too deep into all that. I think it's good for when you're trying to develop another pitch. But the main thing for me is just feeling everything that I want to feel with the ball coming out of my hand and the way my body is moving. And then if, you know, if something's really not working right and I'm struggling to find it again, then you can go to that kind of data and figure out what's going on. But really at this point, I feel pretty confident in what I'm trying to do with the baseball. And so just trying to feel all my cues and stuff when I'm getting off the mound and go from there.
I know it's only been one game, but Crochet, Garcia, Kopech, and Leon pitched really well against the Tigers on Thursday. Is that something where you guys are in that pen kind of looking around going, all right, listen, great start, let's keep it up? Like, does that kind of good pressure, that good kind of drive exist already for this team?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, our bullpen already is really tight. We have a group chat together, and you know, Leon kind of put the group chat together and was like, hey, let's keep shoving and keep working. So we're all pushing each other. And I think it's fun right now, too, because there's not really any specified roles. So anytime that phone rings, we're all ready to go. And whoever it is, we're behind that guy supporting him. So it's a cool thing to be a part of and be close to these guys. And everyone's pushing each other to be even better.
That's awesome, man. Jordan, really appreciate it. And if the phone rings for you today, we know you'll be ready. We'll be rooting for you as well. Best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it. Jordan Leisure, right-handed fireballer for the White Sox out of the bullpen, could be making his Major League debut today. Next time he pitches will be. Made his first big league roster, and that is one hell of an accomplishment for young Jordan Leisure. We are coming up against a break. We got the pregame show starting at 12:30. We'll bounce it around with some headlines from around big league baseball and check in on some of the latest as well. So, big thanks to Jordan Leisure for hanging out with us here on White Sox Weekly. And we've got more show coming up. We'll pause it here real quick, 10 seconds for station identification. Stay tuned. We got baseball this afternoon. White Sox and Tigers at 1:10. This is ESPN 1000.
Nation, or check them out online at windownation.com. Buy two, get two free. Zero down, zero interest, no payment for 24 months. That's Window Nation and windownation.com, and let them know that Sylvie sent you.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. If you've ever dreamed of being in a White Sox ad, and I know you have, now is your chance. Show your White Sox pride and share your favorite ballpark memories with us for the opportunity to be featured in a commercial, digital ad, billboards, and more. Submit your photos or videos at whitesox.com/fan. I don't think I'm eligible for that campaign, and it's probably a good thing that there isn't, well, there's probably concourse video of me at the ballpark as a young kid. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. As a young lad, I think I was, well, it was 1991 was the first year of the ballpark. I think it was 1992 that I was here, so like 7 years old. I came to the ballpark here at 35th and Shields. It was then, you know, New Comiskey, of course, now Guaranteed Rate Field, as we know and love it. And I... 7 years old, right? So my dad and I are at the game. I don't remember who the White Sox played because apparently I was on a mission. And I, in every half inning, every single half inning, I had some sort of snack. I had a hot dog. I had ice cream. I had cotton candy. I had Cracker Jacks. I think I even had a slice of pizza. Like every inning, I had something else to eat. And by the time the sixth inning came around, as my dad tells the story, I looked at my dad and announced that I needed to leave. I lost a bit of the lunch at one point around the concourse down the left field line. I apologize to anyone who still works here that had to clean up that nonsense. But then again, I was seven. I was then taken to the medical bay, the infirmary here at the ballpark. I got some ice chips. I remember that. And the woman that was working there was incredibly nice and didn't at all make fun of me, again, because I was seven and just enjoying myself at a ball game. And I remember we walked home. We walked to the red line just down the street. My dad put me up on his shoulders, even as a seven, because I was very sick still, and then told me not to do it again while I was up on his shoulders. I'm glad that that particular White Sox memory is not going to be featured in an ad, but it is kind of a, I think, kind of a funny one, and you can make fun of me for it when you see me next time. But that was my first, no, it wasn't my first experience at the ballpark. It was my first experience at Guaranteed Rate Field. I actually went to Old Comiskey as a very young kid. Don't remember that visit, you know, because I was like two. But that was one of my first visits to a Major League Baseball game, to a White Sox game for sure. And I don't remember it fondly. I wish I did. But when you have an afternoon like that, I think you can kind of understand where I'm coming from. If you've got better White Sox memories, and I know you do, get yourself in one of the ads or billboards or digital ads by going to whitesox.com/fan. Let's get some headlines from around baseball. Opening day was, technically speaking, like a week and a half ago with the Dodgers and Padres playing in Seoul, South Korea. But Thursday opened things up for everybody, and we've got some games starting in just a little bit as well. There are a few things that matter to this AL Central that happened yesterday. Royce Lewis, the Twins phenom, the kid that got absolutely smoking molten lava hot late in the season and had five grand slams just last year alone. Four last year, five already in his young career. He's going to the IL with a quad injury. One of their top prospects, although Austin Martin's slid a little bit in prospect rankings, former top 100 guy that they got from the Blue Jays for Jose Berrios. He's coming up to the big league roster. Royce Lewis to the IL is a big blow to the Twins. He was going to be relied on for a lot of power in that lineup, one that cut payroll quite a bit because of some situations with their cable contract. So now you've got a team that's going to be without their starting third baseman, a hot young player, a guy that's got a lot of pop. And with a season like last year from Carlos Correa, there's now more pressure on that big contract and Byron Buxton and the rest of that team, Alex Kirilloff. Missing Royce Lewis for any kind of time is going to cost the Minnesota Twins, I think. A few other injuries, unfortunately. I hate when injuries come early to teams like this. I despise it. Injuries are going to happen through points of the season. But I think you should be able to slide the injury slider off for the month of March/April. I don't think they should be allowed. I think we need to talk to the powers that be, the gods of baseball, and tell them to turn injuries off for the first month of the season. It's no fun. Sean Murphy, Braves catcher, to the injured list with a strained left oblique. And then Cubs ace Justin Steele, who finished, I think, second in NL Cy Young voting. I know he did get votes behind Blake Snell. He's going to the IL, it looks like, with a hamstring. Don't know if that move has been made official yet, but Craig Counsell, the manager, told reporters that it would be a likely IL trip or Justin Steele. The Nationals had Nick Senzel hit the 10-day IL. Senzel was taking grounders in the warm-up and broke a thumb. If you remember the name Nick Senzel, you might not, mostly because an L guy and an AL, you know, I mean, we play a lot of interleague baseball nowadays, but I think you still, if you're an AL fan, and you are, if you're a White Sox fan, of course, you see fewer NL teams, pay a little less attention to the senior circuit. Senzel was a top prospect for the Cincinnati Reds a few years back. That was going to be, you know, kind of a push on those good Joey Votto teams, bringing in some top talent. And Senzel just had some trouble sticking. They bounced him around to a lot of positions, center fielder, third baseman, middle infielder. What are we doing with Nick Senzel? Nationals got him and really thought this that kind of reboot for a top talent would be helpful. And it, who knows, hopefully it still can be, but a broken thumb is really going to set him back in terms of being able to, you know, grip the, hopefully grip the bat and swing and everything like that. So Nick Senzel hits the injured list as well. We'll go through some more headlines throughout the bigs when we get to the pregame show at 12:30. Oh, and some news out too. Dominic Smith has signed a minor league deal with the Tampa Bay Rays. And it looks like we've got some White Sox news too. Let me just keep on scrolling through the old Major League trade rumors. Yeah, this is from James Fegan of Sox Machine. Had this out, and MLB's transaction page had this as well. The White Sox have released two notable names. Shortstop Lucius Fox and outfielder Yoelki Cespedes have reportedly been released in the last couple of days. I have not seen a release from the team on this. Yoelki Cespedes was an international signee that the White Sox gave some good money to. Fox was a highly regarded international prospect who signed for a $6 million bonus with the Giants in 2015. So two guys who were prized players in that international pipeline from the Giants in Fox's case, and Cespedes with the White Sox signed to a $2.05 million deal in January of 2021, thought to be a top guy, have now been reportedly released by the organization. Paul Yonish is the new farm director, replacing Chris Getz as he was moved up to the general manager's spot. And again, like I said, that news is yet to be confirmed by the team, but has been reported in a couple of different places, James Fegan being one of those reputable reporters mentioning that news. The White Sox, we mentioned earlier before we talked to Jordan Leisure here on White Sox Weekly, announced the lineup for today, and it does have a different look. We talked a lot about Dominic Fletcher already. Braden Shumake gets the shortstop position for the White Sox today. And I've been scrolling through Twitter here trying to find the latest from beat reporters and a little bit from Pedro Grifol as well. I would still expect that Paul DeJong is starting shortstop and going to have the bulk of that position going forward. I would think that the runway there is pretty good. But shortstop as a position for the White Sox is an interesting one, right? It starts, and I mean this from a talent perspective, from a what's going to be next and best for the White Sox going forward here. Colson Montgomery is that dude. He's a top 10 prospect ranked by just about everybody who ranks prospect, the top 10, top 15 guy in Major League Baseball, and somebody who had a good spring, somebody who really shined in the Arizona Fall League and just, you know, shot through the minor leagues last year. He'll play AAA Charlotte this season. Colson Montgomery is where the conversation kind of begins about the shortstop position for the White Sox. Then you get to the guys, I think, that are on this roster right now, and Paul DeJong and Braden Shumake, who's going to play short today. Shumake is a lot taller than I thought he'd be. I mean, you hear Braden Shumake and you think, oh, kind of, all right, guy, you know, this is a tall dude, got some good range, I think a little bit more pop than that he'd like to get to, a former prospect with a little bit of helium attached to things. So I'm interested to see what Shumake can do for us in 2024 for today's ballgame, too. It's possible that Grifol is kind of altering the playing assignments a little bit, but we're so early on that what we're doing here, I've seen this on White Sox Twitter a little bit, are we platooning or what's happening here with the shortstop spot? I think it's a little bit too early to tell one way or the other. One of the things that Pedro Grifol and even Tony La Russa before him said that was going to be a focus for this team, and this is carried over, is getting guys action, you know, getting the bench involved early on in the season. It was one of Tony's tenets, really, that you wanted to see that bench get work early on, that guys would, and this is something Steve Stone says quite a bit, more in relation to the bullpen than anything else, but the guys will rust away before they wear away, right? That they'll, you know, not playing them is going to hurt them more than using them a lot in the opening part of the season. And even Steve, you know, will tell you, obviously that has its limits, right? I mean, if you're pitching, you're not going to pitch Brian Shaw every day, even though he raises his hand to pitch every day. You're not going to have that happen. But you've got to make sure to rotate the playing time around early on as best you can. It can be very detrimental to a player, regardless of the expectations on any one particular guy, to play through spring training and get a lot of work, play in backfields and B games and what have you, and then just kind of sit there and take BP and infield and hang out on the bench for a week and a half or so. That can really sap away the timing and the rhythm and the availability, or I should say the depth that a team's got available to them. So Braden Shoemaker is going to get some work. He'll make his 2024 debut, his White Sox debut today, batting 7 and playing short. And Dominic Fletcher will bat 6 and play right. Now, here's the other part of this. The Tigers have some good lefty arms in the bullpen, right? We saw a few of them yesterday. Andrew Chafin was left in to face Andrew Benintendi to start the ninth inning. He got Benintendi striking out. It was one that needed to be completed by the catcher, a 2-3 strikeout, drop third strike. So Chafin was left in, faced that next lefty. Then Jason Foley, a right-hander, came in to finish off the ball game. He got Yoan Moncada and then Luis Robert both swinging. Tyler Holton exists. Joey Wentz is a lefty in the pen for A.J. Hinch and the Tigers. And Chafin, you know, has the day off yesterday and could be available to go here. So what you've got to wonder with Kenta Maeda pitching for the Tigers today is, knowing that he's often a five-inning guy, how aggressive is A.J. Hinch willing to be with a guy like Chafin and the other lefties that we talked about in facing the bottom part of the White Sox lineup today? Fletcher, Shoemaker, and Lopez, all lefties, all stacked in that lineup. And I would imagine that something Pedro Grifol, I know that something Pedro Grifol has considered here is, okay, those lefties get two roles probably at Kenta Maeda, the right-hander. You get that kind of platoon advantage there. Fletcher and Shoemaker and Lopez, you know, both two of them, Fletcher and Shoemaker, young players, get that platoon advantage. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Pedro go to the bench and bring Paul DeJong back into a game looking for some power and maybe a righty-lefty matchup to kind of neutralize some of that left-handed work out of A.J. Hinch's bullpen today. Something strategically that I think we might be able to look for here in today's ballgame, getting down to a granular level. Now, on the other side of things, this Tigers bullpen was good last season and figures to be pretty good again this year. Jason Foley, right-hander, Alex Lang, right-hander, and Alex Fajardo, you know, all kind of found themselves last year. They brought in Shelby Miller, who we saw on Thursday, and Miller, former top starting prospect all the way back with the St. Louis Cardinals, has kind of refound himself as a bullpen arm over the last year, 2 years or so. And they're hoping for some quality work and some really devastating, you know, fastball stuff from Shelby Miller. I think, you know, as you look at this division and kind of parse out who the top teams are going to be once we get to the end of 2024, you kind of have the Tigers, the Twins, and the Guardians. I think in that same tier, I think there are some who would tell you that the Guardians are maybe, or rather the Tigers are in that tier behind the Guardians and Twins, that those two are the top two teams, and the Tigers could make a push, but maybe aren't ready yet. See what they do with the deadline with a good farm system, not a great farm system. They've already got Colt Keith, one of their top prospects, up and playing second base. He got the big pre-arb extension, or I guess I should say pre-debut extension, something like $80-something million. He made his major league debut yesterday against the White Sox. Colt Keith did, and he was 1-for-4 with an infield single against Garrett Crochet. But at the end of the day, whether you're talking about the Twins pitching, the Tigers pitching, or the Guardians pitching, I think the question kind of comes down to what those teams can do offensively. And that's why at the beginning of this segment, we were talking about Royce Lewis's injury to the Twins being a pretty impactful one. That offense needs to bang. And in order to do that, I think Royce Lewis has got to be there for a good long while. So we shall see exactly how that offense rolls up and how Austin Martin provides for the Twins. I think as you look at what the White Sox can do to neutralize some of these teams, it's by being the kind of bullpen that Jordan Leisure told us he thinks the bullpen can be this year. He understood when we talked to the youngster that the expectations weren't necessarily there for this team, but that whether it's a veteran like Dominic Leone, or that it's a rookie like Jordan Leisure, that they've got a good vibe in there and that they've got an understanding that they can be dynamic. Even if And one thing we haven't talked about yet from Thursday's ball game is Michael Kopech out of the bullpen. We'll do that when we come back. Even if you've got some wildness in that bullpen, you've got some strikeout stuff, I think, from a few players that could take that next step. So while you've kind of managed your middle innings, deploying that high strikeout stuff in the right leverage opportunities gives Pedro Grifol and Ethan Katz a chance to make what is right now kind of an interesting and maybe iffy bullpen into one that can answer some of those questions and handle some of those tougher parts of the lineup. We'll see. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. White Sox Weekly back for a final segment here in just a minute on ESPN 1000. Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and we've got ourselves a ball game coming up this afternoon. White Sox and Tigers are the matchup here for game number two of the season. And if you've ever dreamed of being in a White Sox ad, now's your chance. Show your White Sox pride and share your favorite ballpark memories with us for the opportunity to be featured in a commercial, digital ad, billboards, and more. Submit your photos or videos at whitesox.com/fan. Pre-game show at 12:30. Len Casper and Darren Jackson right at 1 o'clock. First pitch, 1:10. We'll see the White Sox debut of Michael Soroka. We'll see the Tigers debut of Kenta Maeda. Looking back to Thursday's ballgame, I mean, we spent the first hour of the show talking about the Garrett Crochet of it all, just how magnificent he was against the Tigers. And really, I think what's most, maybe as impressive as anything else, probably not most impressive, because most impressive was him, you know, sitting around 98, 97 and flashing triple digits once or twice while mowing down a Tigers lineup. But along with that was, I think Garrett and the White Sox coaching staff probably heard a thing or two about what had gotten said about the decision to make him opening day starter. It was an unorthodox one, and in some corners got questioned as a do-they-know-what-they're-doing kind of thing. I was really glad to see Garrett Crochet answer those questions, and I think some of those questions were a little bit unfounded in that we've seen guys make, you know, kind of first starts on opening day. Not like your first MLB start, but kind of, you know, first of a brand new era of your career, right? A guy that comes up in September, makes a start or two, gets a lot of bullpen work, and then, you know, makes an opening day start because he's risen to number one or something like that. We've seen teams before break camp with four starters and an extra guy in the bullpen because the schedule's funky and it allows you to do that, and you think you can get more usage out of that bullpen arm than a fifth starter who's not going to be involved in your plans until that day you need a fifth starter. That's not foreign to baseball anymore. We see teams manipulate the roster that way. So I think some of that got a little overblown. I think the idea of kind of questioning some things is absolutely fair, right? A healthy level of scrutiny, I think, is deserved for every ball club as they go through the season, because that's why we pay attention. That's why we care. That's why we're fans. But I also think that having that out there gives a guy a chip on the shoulder. And I mean, I like that. I really do. I like the ability that a guy has, in this case, Garrett Crochet, to go out there and say, you know what, shut up, watch me work, and then you can go ahead and level criticism. Then you can go ahead and kind of come down on me. And I also think, too, there are plenty of opening day starts that don't go the right way, because opening day is opening day. And whether it's somebody getting all goosed up and a little bit more amped than they should, or whether it's a guy just having a bad day, you're going to have bad starts. Ed Farmer used to talk about this all the time, God rest his soul, that you're going to go out there and have your great stuff for X amount of starts, your okay stuff for a couple, and there's going to be a few where you walk out there and you have absolutely nothing and have to invent a new pitch on the fly. And sometimes that happens to guys in their first start of the season. Yoshinobu Yamamoto signed for a gajillion dollars with the Dodgers and went out there against the Padres, and I don't believe he lasted a full inning. And if he did, he got pulled after that inning because he got his brains beat in against the Dodgers. I would still place a bet if I were a betting man, on Yoshinobu Yamamoto to win NL Rookie of the Year and maybe even Cy Young. I think he's got that kind of talent. But just because you have one start and it's the first one that goes sideways does not mean that that's going to be the rest of your season. And I think that's worth saying because I'd have said that regardless of what happened to Garrett Crochet on Thursday. And I think giving him the opportunity to be a starter, to claim that role that the White Sox front office, whether it be this one or the one before it, had ready for him for a while now, makes all the sense in the world in 2024. Can't wait for his next start. Today, you've got Michael Soroka against the Tigers. You've got Kenta Maeda for Detroit. And we've got the pregame show coming to you in just a couple of minutes, so don't go anywhere. A big thank you to Kevin Zipak and Jack McGrath, our producers in the downtown Chicago studios. White Sox baseball is coming up this afternoon. It's a gorgeous day at the ballpark, so stay with us right here on ESPN 1000.